Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking with Ambassador Thomas Pickering, who's going to be in Santa Fe this weekend, courtesy of the Santa Fe Council on International Relations. I'd like right now to welcome the artist, Ricardo Masal. His latest installation, well, his installation that has recently been completed, Odenwald 1152, is documented in a book that will be launched this Saturday, May 2nd, from 3 to 4 at Garcia Street Books. And there will be also be a discussion with Dwight Hackett and a small exhibition at Garcia Street Books through the 8th of May. Welcome, Ricardo, to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So Odenwald is a region in Germany where there's a forest that became the inspiration for this work. Tell us that story.
Well, about a year and a half ago, I visited some friends that live in a little town about 1 hour south of Frankfurt. The town is called Michelstadt. My friend is a painter, and they happen to live in a beautiful castle. And I just wanted to take my two little girls to visit.
I love it how in Europe, painters can live in castles.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
Fantastic little castle. And the last day we were there visiting, he invited us to visit a forest where him and his wife like to walk during the weekends. It's sort of like a park, and it's very near the downtown of Michelstadt. So we went there, and as we were walking, I noticed that most of the trees had a little sign or a number to it in a metal plaque. And I asked him what that little number was, thinking that maybe the, you know, German way was to classify all the trees, that kind of thing. But he said to me that it was a cemetery, which surprised me enormously, because it really looked like a park. And I asked him, where are the tombstones? And he said, there are none. You buy a tree for the term of 99 years, and you can be buried there right next to the tree, a few feet from the tree, in a biodegradable urn, which means that it's your ashes. And then you can bury yourself and up to 10 people of a family around the tree. And that's it. There's no more markings or anything, because they wanted to have this as a park as well, as a public space, as well as a cemetery.
And there's no names on these trees, no markers of the grave besides just these anonymous numbers.
Once you are buried, they put a small plaque with your name and the dates of your birth and your death.
Okay.
And then they keep adding as other people of the family are buried there.
And then they dedicated a tree to you, which is the number 1152.
Yes. Well, the story is that I had completed a few years ago another project regarding a tomb, and that was the tomb of the Red Queen in the Maya region in Mexico. That is a project related to burials, so that's what called my attention to this new project. And I decided to go back and photograph the forest, because I work from the photographs to the paintings. And when I went back to Germany, I had the fortune to have an interview with the mayor of the town of Michelstadt. And after 2 years of, two hours of talking, he expressed his desire to give me a tree, which really surprised me and really touched me. He said that he wanted Michelstadt to be part of the project. My answer immediately was, well, I need to tell you that I'm Mexican, and second, I'm Jewish, so I don't think I will be buried here in Germany, in Michelstadt.
Right.
He then said, well, that's even more reason for which I would like to give you a tree as a symbolic gesture to you. and to, you know, give you our hand in, on behalf of the people of Minkitsat. And we want you to take the tree. So I accepted, and the next day, it was a very challenging experience to go to the forest and to walk around for approximately 2 hours with the mayor and to select my tree. And that is quite a challenge, because how do you choose your tree in which you are thinking you're going to spend the rest of eternity, right?
It's sort of like an almost Carlos Castaneda type thing, waiting for it to speak to you.
Yes, exactly, exactly. And that's exactly the way I choose projects. It's the Carlos Castaneda thing of it just appears in front of me and I choose to work with it. This is the way it happened with the Red Queen. This is the way it happened with the new project of Odenwald. And this is the way it happened with the third project I'm going to work on, it, which is the sky burials in Tibet.
And so those are the three tomb or burial projects in this trilogy of installations.
That's correct. And I just want to make a point is that the installations are composed of large-scale paintings, photographs, in some cases works on paper, monotypes and stuff, video, and music composed by a friend of mine who's local, Chris Jonas.
Right. And so the tree that you chose had a kind of symbolic feeling, because it, I think it had two large trunks and then two smaller ones that represent your mother, father, and your two daughters, in a way.
That's correct. I was looking for trees that would give me somehow, in my photographs and in the transformation that I do with the photographs so that I could sketch out my paintings, I was looking for a tree that I could visualize the in the structure of the tree, something very pictoric, maybe from the texture of the tree, the shapes and forms of the branches. But that didn't satisfy me until I suddenly, in the long distance, I saw this tree, which had a from one trunk, four trunks came out of it. You know, a bigger one, which I thought it was me at first,
right.
But it's my wife really. And two small ones. So it was really the family tree, each branch symbolizing each of us.
So then the process that you use is interesting. You start with digital photographs, you manipulate them on the computer, you make prints, you make paintings, and there's kind of an interactive process among all those different stages.
That's right. Since about 10 years ago, I began experimenting with the digital technology and working it into my paintings so that I could expand my view and expand the resources that I could use for my paintings. Photography is something more recent for me. At first, I deconstructed the paintings with Photoshop. And I worked only with the paintings. So
you made paintings first, then photographed them?
Right.
Okay.
Then photographed them. And then the most straightforward way would be to crop a painting and then use that crop and repaste it and distort it. And then I would get quickly new ideas. But slowly that began developing and being more and more sophisticated. So I started integrating photographs since the first project of the trilogy, the Tomb of the Red Queen, where I photographed the jungle around the pyramids at night with a flash.
Now, which pyramids?
The Palenque pyramids, okay. Where the Red Queen was buried, and I was invited to visit the Palenque pyramids at night by the archaeologists that discovered the tomb. And he wanted to walk up the main pyramid, and I was way too afraid because it's too very steep. So he suggested I would walk behind the pyramid, a little path that goes up to the pyramid. And when I did that, it was pitch black. I was with one of his helpers with a flashlight. And I took my digital camera and started shooting blindly into the branches of the jungle.
With flash?
With a flash.
Okay.
Yeah. And in the screen, I started recognizing these branches like they have to do with my drawings. So I shot about 500 photographs. And after I visited the Tomb of the King that night, I went back to the hotel. And at midnight, I started downloading these photographs and transforming them. So they looked really like charcoal drawings.
Interesting.
That was really the breakthrough for me when I began working with photographs and transforming them until I could visualize them as drawings or as paintings.
Now, your paintings are some, I guess, I'm just getting to know your work, but on some borderline between abstract and the way nature is kind of abstract forms, but you can still see the branches of trees in it.
I've always looked for this point, this tension between abstraction and reality. I've never thought that there was a distinction between them. It's a continuous line.
Right.
And the computer and the photographs allowed me to transform reality to the point that I could bring them to paintings, conserving some of that feeling, like in the terms of Odenwald, where there is the presence of trees and the light of the light coming through the branches and the leaves of the trees. That's the feeling that you have in the paintings. There is a verticality of the trunks, and there is this shimmering of light that I use in the paintings. And yet they're totally abstract.
Right.
When you know what they are, you can identify them. So there's this line between abstraction and figuration that really interests me.
So is it important for you that when somebody who doesn't know your work is looking at your installation for the first time, that those original inspirational photographs, the digital photographs, are there with the light shimmering through the trunks and so on?
At this point, it is. I've presented the photographs next to the paintings now. Not because I want people to immediately know what the subject matter is. I prefer them to look at the paintings or go back and forth and see the paintings as paintings and be able to get close to the textures and the colors and everything that a painting is able to give you. But also refer back to a subject that has content and meaning and, you know, some profound meaning that allows people to reflect on it. What my experience with the Tomb of the Red Queen, which has been presented in, you know, several museums already, the Anthropology Museum in Mexico City, Scottsdale Contemporary Art Museum, and a couple of others, and the Odenwald Project, is that people become fascinated by the subject itself. You can imagine when people begin thinking about being buried next to a tree. And
what an amazing idea.
It is. And it's a very contemporary idea. It's only been about 8 or 10 years since it began in Switzerland. And it's spreading through Europe very quickly.
And, I mean, another amazing thing about it, besides just the kind of spiritual quality of wanting to be buried in a forest, is that they'll never be able to deforest those areas.
Right. Exactly. That's right. And they are taking care of the forest, you know, and they're cutting down the trees that are not appropriate for this. Trees that maybe are more prone to get burnt or to have, you know, get sick or whatever.
Right.
And they're replanting new trees. And it's fascinating how people choose the tree. Some people choose a tree that is 400 years old, this huge trunk. People also choose trees that were planted just a few days ago.
Right.
And they want to grow with the tree. But one of the most beautiful experiences I had, Mary Charlotte, is, I like to talk about it because people ask me why I work with this subject of burials. And I always say it's not about the death, it's about life. And what happened to me in the Odenwald is that being there, I suddenly saw these children playing and hide and seek around the trees. And it just, it's an image that stayed in me. And the fact that this burial site is a very, it's a place which is very much alive. And if you compare it to the normal traditional cemeteries, those places are dead, you know, and you're afraid to go into and you're afraid to play in.
Although less so in Mexico, no?
Less so in Mexico because of the tradition in Mexico. Well, there in Oaxaca, you can go and have dinner on the...
in the cemetery.
in the cemetery. And that's true. But that's only like in the festivities or, you know, in the anniversary of your dead person.
Right.
Here in Odenwald, it's like a public park. And it's a place where kids and dogs and joggers and everybody's there. And
amazing.
And that's what I find very beautiful. So it's really about us alive looking at the death.
And then our ashes, I mean our, the purse, the people's, whoever it is, ashes are recycled in these biodegradable containers. And on some level, they then feed the trees and the worms and everybody else. And so life is literally recycled.
Literally recycled, exactly. Now, my third project, which will be in Tibet, is about the sky burials. And that is also a recyclable thing. The Red Queen was in the year 600 in the jungle in the Maya region in Mexico. Germany is 2008 in the forest. In Germany. And Tibet is the practice of sky burials. It's something that happened back in the year 600 and today. And the sky burials is where they chop the body into all the parts like a butcher, and they separate the organs and the bones and everything so that the vultures and other animals come in and feed from it. And this is for them a way of recycling into nature, too. So it's really fascinating to
see. Why do they call them sky burials?
I guess because the vultures come and they take, and then they go back to the sky.
They go back to the sky. Yeah. We're talking to artist Ricardo Masal. So this book is a very beautifully printed book. Do you see it as a documentation of the project? Is it kind of an artwork in its own right?
I see it like that. I love to be involved in the design and production of the books. And I consider it also as part of the series. As much as the installation and the paintings, the book becomes part of it. So, yes.
So, I'm sorry that our listeners won't have the opportunity to actually see the installation. I guess you don't really designed for one specific space. It's the installation is flexible enough so that it can be in different spaces, but it's pretty much a museum-sized or large gallery-sized piece when it's all put together?
Yes, you're absolutely right. I do these projects, and mostly I paint more than what I could show. And they do adapt to the different spaces. The Odenwald paintings have been shown at the Mexican Cultural Institute in Washington, D.C., and then traveled to New York to my gallery, the Sundaram Tagore Gallery. And it will probably travel to some museums beginning this year. And I hope to have a very large exhibition in Mexico City of the three projects, the trilogy. And they do, you know, grow or become smaller depending on the space available.
Now, I've always wondered, people who do installations based on nature, my experience as a viewer, I can go into the forest and experience it, or I can go into the museum and experience somebody's interpretation of the forest. What does that I mean, I guess the whole concept of having the burial theme really makes it alive in a new way for the viewer. But what do you hope to evoke in the viewer that they couldn't have if they were just simply going into nature itself?
I guess what's important for me is the reflection that I could provoke in the viewer about what they're viewing. And this is very important because I'm an abstract artist. And I had the experience in Mexico City at the Museum of Anthropology, where a large portion of the public that saw that project of the Red Queen were not people used to going to contemporary museums. Most of them, or many of them, had never seen a contemporary show.
Really?
And when they saw the video where you saw the transformation of a photograph, how slowly it was transforming and abstracting itself, up to the point where I took that and decomposed it or transformed it with a computer and then brought it into the painting, they were extremely surprised, and they began saying, well, I'm finally beginning to understand what abstract art is. And that's to me what's important. Many of them, people told me that they would love to go back to Palenque and see the Red Queen again, because I'm sure that after this they would see the Red Queen, you know, the tomb with different eyes, which is what I was experiencing. The importance of nature around it, the importance of the stones around the tomb. And in the case of Odenwald, most people began thinking, oh my God, wouldn't it be fantastic to be buried like this?
Yeah.
So, you know, as a painter, obviously, and the paintings then are going to leave the installation and go to homes or, you know, wherever their final destination is.
Oh, so they get divided up eventually, sell them.
That's right. You know, they go to an institution or a museum or a private collection. And then there are paintings. That's
right.
It. There's no more to it.
Oh, very interesting.
So
the piece has its own life cycle.
Exactly. And that's, to me, extremely important, that the pieces, the paintings themselves have the integrity and the quality of painting without the necessary having, you know, all more supportive material to make it live or make it important.
Ricardo Masal is an artist, and his book is called Odenwald 1152. And it documents the installation by that name, and you can meet him and see the book at Garcia Street Books here in Santa Fe this Saturday, May 2nd from 3 to 4. And there will also be a discussion with Dwight Hackett and a small exhibition at the bookstore through the 8th of May. Ricardo Masal, thank you so much for being with us, and please come back again when part 3 of the trilogy happens.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. Thank you.
We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we'll be speaking with Ambassador Thomas Pickering. Please stay tuned to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.